Hello there, and welcome to episode number 5 of the Tao of Tech podcast, an interview with Dead Hunt author Ken Crawford. The Tao of Tech is going to be your weekly dose in the way of technology. Episodes will be featuring the weekly geeky goings-on of me, your host, Mark Prestash. Shows will generally focus on a couple of tech topics a week, including software, hardware, and everything tech-related from the coolest geek toys to the best in podcast novels. For this week's show, I'm interviewing my friend Ken Crawford, who is the author of the podcast novel Dead Hunt. Ken and I spoke over Skype for about 40 minutes and discussed his book, social media, and some of the tools and tricks he uses to record his podcast. Now, please stay tuned after the show because I will be playing the promo for Dead Hunt for you guys to check out. Without further ado, here is the interview I had with Ken Crawford. I'm excited to do the first of what I hope to be many interviews on the Tao of Tech. Today I have on the line Ken Crawford, the author of the zombie podcast novel Dead Hunt. First, I'd like to say thanks, Ken, for taking time out of your busy schedule to do this interview with me.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, I'm a fan of your book, Dead Hunt. I subscribe to the podcast. When people ask me about Dead Hunt, I always describe it as cheerleaders plus zombies equals yay. Why don't you give my listeners your description of what Dead Hunt is about?
Well, I describe Dead Hunt as a tale of a desperate father's undying love, a daughter frozen in time, and a small group of teens trapped in the aftermath of Walking Dead. So basically, it's the story of a scientist with a very powerful computer who makes a very simple mistake, and all hell breaks loose after that.
Cool. Now, how did you come up with the idea for the book? I think I've heard that it was originally a screenplay for a movie, right?
That's right. I was learning how to do filmmaking, and I was listening to the Robert Rodriguez 10-minute film school, and he said to use what you have, because especially when you start getting into making films, you don't have a huge budget. So use what you have cuts down on cost. So I was thinking of what I had to make a movie with, and my daughter's a cheerleader, and I used to videotape all her cheerleading competitions, so all the cheerleaders knew me. So I figured, make a movie about cheerleading, because they have all the uniforms. They could do all the stunts, and it would look really cool on film.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing I thought of is, well, make it a zombie story, because a lot of these actors that I was going to get have never acted in their life. So unless you live under a rock, you know what a zombie walks like, and they don't talk, so there's no dialogue. So we can get a lot of people involved and just make a movie and have fun. So as I was writing the screenplay, my imagination kind of got carried away. A lot.
Yeah.
And I started writing in scenes that it was either too dangerous to film or it would cost too much money. A too dangerous one would be, for example, there's a scene with a bear. I don't know anybody who owns a bear. I don't own a bear. And if I did, I'm not putting my teenage daughter in with a bear. There's another scene where an 18-wheeler flips over on the bridge. I don't have an 18-wheeler or anybody willing to flip their truck over on the bridge. So I had to start taking all those scenes out. And bit by bit, the story just kind of lost its charm. So it was just collecting dust. And then I discovered podcasting by listening to T. Morse with the Podcasting for Dummies, the podcast version of the book that he wrote with Evo Terra. And I was instantly hooked on, this is a great idea. Like, I want to get into podcasting. And I didn't even think of podcasting the book. I just wanted to get into podcasting.
Sure, yeah.
And so I started doing a search for, well, what else does T. Morse do? And I started listening to his different podcasts. And then I found out that he actually podcasted his book. So I started listening to that. And that's when the little light bulb clicked on, because I'm a little slow sometimes.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, podcast my novel. So all these scenes that I can't film, I can put them back in. And that's how Dead Hunt came to be Dead Hunt.
Awesome. Now, how long did it take you to actually write the book?
Start to finish, almost 3 years. Yes. I already said I was not too smart sometimes. I didn't have word counts. I knew nothing about writing. This is my first novel. So I didn't have a set schedule. I didn't make myself write every day. I just wrote when I felt like it. And last summer, I decided that I'm going to sit down and finish the book. So I came into my summer cottage with the intentions of writing the book. So I get up in the morning, have breakfast, write the book. Stop, eat, write the book. And I did that for the entire summer. And at the end of the summer, Dead Hunt was done.
It must have been a really great feeling to finish that.
It was a great feeling to know that I could type the end.
Yeah.
It was only the beginning, but it was the end.
Must be nice to look back and, you know, to see where you started and to, you know, to conclude the story to, you know, to your satisfaction. It must be a really good feeling.
It was a great feeling because it's 3 years getting to the point where I basically rewrote it several times within 3 months and finished it just by sticking to it and writing every single day. I did in 3 months what I should have did 3 years ago.
Now, I think you have mentioned that the locations in the book are, for the most part, real locations that are either near or around where you live or where you grew up. Now, does this sort of go along with that whole Robert Rodriguez use what you have around you theme?
Absolutely. Like when I was watching his film, his 10-minute film school, he said when he was shooting his first movie, he went by what he had. So he lived in a small town. He had a guitar case and a turtle. So his opening scene of his movie was the guy was walking into town holding a guitar case and a turtle walks across the road.
Right.
I don't know what the turtle has to do with anything, but that, it was cool. So I was going to write about what I knew, and I love Margaree Valley. I've been coming here since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. So much the fact that after I finished Dead Hunt, I'd never left. I'm still in Margaree. I just came up here to write the novel and never left.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, so, and I'm writing about things that I see. So every location, with the exception of the secret laboratory and a little cafe that I put in there, every place that's mentioned is a real place.
So you're telling me that there is no secret science laboratory in your backyard, Ken?
Nope, no secret laboratory.
I failed chemistry.
Yeah, I failed chemistry, so they wouldn't give me a chemistry set to start a lab.
Jeez. I'm sorry, go on. So the location of the story, yeah.
like everything about Bedeck and Alexander Graham Bell, that's all true. The giant McCaskill Museum, or the Cape Breton Giant, that's all that information about him is true, and he really is a big man. The Seal Island Bridge, the fact that Cape Breton is called an island, but it's really two islands because the Atlantic Ocean does run in from each end, and it meets in the middle at the Bredour Lakes, which is a freshwater lake.
Yeah, actually, I actually had to, when I heard that, it intrigued me, and I actually went on Google Maps and pulled it up to take a look at, just to get the visual of what you were talking about.
Yeah, it's beautiful country here. It's just the scenery is unbelievable, especially in the fall. The weather's not the greatest, but the scenery is just absolutely amazing. Like on this side of the island where I'm at now is all in the highlands. Well, I'm in the valley, but it's all the highlands, little small communities. When you cross over to the other side of the island, when you head basically as far east as you can go without swimming, that's the industrial area. So that's where like Glace Bay, Sydney Mines, all the coal mining, all the fishing and everything is all in that general area. But the island itself is just, it's a sight to behold.
Yeah, I mean the way you describe the places in the book, you know, it does definitely sound like a very, I don't want to say quaint, but, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, it does sound like a very quaint and, you know, very peaceful place to be, which I think really works very well with the book because you're taking this, I don't want to say sleepy, but this sort of this quiet place and you're throwing this catastrophe into this wide open space. And it really creates the tension, I think, because of the distance between locations and you know, and again the contrast between the imagery of your location with some of the goings on in the book.
Well, thank you. It's I never really thought of it that way, but now that you've described it, it makes perfect sense. It's like the dichotomy of it is the island is so quiet and peaceful and quaint and sleepy, and we got. And all this havoc is going on at the exact same time. It actually works out pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny. I live in a very similar town, and it's hard at times to not sort of transpose the goings on in your book with me imagining that going on in my town, just because they're so similar in you know, size, it sounds like, in the distances and just the overall area. It really, you know, like I said, the writing definitely makes me think, and it definitely makes me, you know, think about it outside of just listening to the story. It's not, I just listen to it and I'm done, I move on. It kind of sticks with me, and I you know, walk outside and say, oh, gee, you know, that kind of looks like this, or that reminds me of that. And, you know, it definitely sticks with me to the point of where I think about it, you know, later on, and I think about it in other points in my day.
Well, thank you. One person said, well, remind me never to visit Cape Breton because there's just way too many zombies.
Yeah, exactly.
And no way to get off the island because, as it says in the book.
Because there's that darn truck that tipped over and the bridge is closed.
Yeah, well, yeah, not only that, but the Canso Causeway, that is the only way on and off the island. So if the Canso Causeway was closed for any reason, you're on the island, you're staying there. There's no way off it.
All right, so you write the book in 3 years. You know, you start it, you put your nose to the grindstone, and you bang the book out, you edit it. Why did you decide to podcast the book? Why didn't you go the traditional publishing route for Dead Hunt?
Well, the original story, like I said, was going to be a movie, and I got inspired by T. Morris to turn it into a podcast novel. So basically, when I typed the end, and when I said that was just the beginning, I immediately went into how we're going to make this a podcast novel.
Okay.
And I had no intentions on making it available in print, because I didn't write it for print. I wrote it to be a podcast novel. And I met a friend of mine on Twitter. I met him on Twitter, and he became a friend of mine. And he's an author. And we're talking about different things. And I was reading his book and really liked it, because this is my first novel, and there's a lot of mistakes that I'm making, but I'm learning as I go along. So Claude Bouchard, he said he would do a rough edit for me, like not a really in-depth edit, just a rough edit, because he was in the middle of signing a book deal. So the fact that he would take time out of how busy he is to help me fine-tune the story really meant a lot to me. As he was editing my book and I'm reading his book, I find out that he made it available on Lulu.com.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, no, the book is already done, so why not just make it a self-published print version as well?
Okay.
Claude helped me with that, and I getting all the voice cast for the different roles done, and another gentleman I was helping with music, with teaching him how to record music. We're just chit-chatting one day, and I mentioned that I'm writing the book and everything, and he said, well, I'd like to read it. So I sent it to him to read and to get his opinion on it. I didn't know at the time that he taught creative writing for over 22 years.
Oh, wow.
And he's an editor.
Wow, so, nice person to get in touch with, huh?
Oh, yeah. So it worked out really good, because he said that he would do a really in-depth edit of the book. So meanwhile, all the cast has their roles. They're recording their parts, and he's re-editing the book. So the print version is the results of what I wrote and the changes that my proofreaders helped me with, then what Claude edited with the quick edit to fine tune the story, and then Mike Upchurch, he came in as the editor and really went over it and really helped out a lot. So now, after all the work they put into it, I better make it available in print or they're going to shoot me.
That's funny, because I mean, I have personally found that the people in the podcasting community they're very helpful, and they're very supportive of other authors and other writers. I mean, it sounds like, you know, that's been your experience too.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. It still blows me away when I think about it. Is like, originally I was just going to podcast the whole thing myself. And as like, I'm learning how to do narrating and voice characters I can do. Narrating, I pretty much suck at. So I'm really trying to do the narrating, and I'm really struggling with it. And as I'm getting so far in the story, I realize, okay, I used to work as a ventriloquist, so I can do a lot of different voices. I can do some different accents. There's over 26 different characters in my book.
Wow.
Rich Little, I am not. Like, okay, I need some help. So I went on a podcasting group. And I was probably the only one member of the podcasting group who didn't actually have a podcast. And I just posted a little message and saying that, you know, I wrote this novel, I want to podcast it, and if somebody wants to do a voice role, I could, basically I'm begging for help.
Yeah, please, please help please. Me.
So I was hoping to get, if I can get a couple of females, they'll take care of all of those roles, then I'll fake the rest if I have to.
Sure, yeah.
And like within minutes, Rick Stringer came on board from Varying Frequencies. He wanted to do a role. Kimmy Alexander from Tail Chasing came on board. She wanted to do a role. Irk from Irk Pod. He said, well, if you ever need somebody with an Australian accent, I'd like to do a role.
Which, like, which you did.
Yeah, because one of my characters was an Australian foreign exchange student. It's like, have I got the role for you?
Perfect. Tailor made for you.
Tailor made. And then he actually ended up with two roles. So he's in the book twice. And this all happened within 13 minutes.
Wow. The power of the internet. Right.
Yeah. And by the end of the week, every single role that I had was filled. I was the only person without a role. I had to write a role in for me to do.
Yeah, but it's your book. I mean, geez, come on. You got to have something, yeah, to do, you know?
I have the shortest role.
Now, the narrator of the book is Renee Chambliss, right?
Yes.
She came aboard in that same time frame. Is that how she got on board?
No, she came on board much later. I had all of the voice roles in. So the only thing left to do was to narrate it. Like, I've been doing a lot of practicing, but I didn't do a recording until I had all the voice roles, because I didn't want to start releasing it and find out that, like, somebody took sick or something like that happened.
Now, was your original plan to do the narration yourself and then supplement your narration with the voice characters? Was that your original plan?
That was the plan. I'd narrate it and then use all our voices, and I did a couple of recordings of me narrating it. I inserted their voices, and I'm listening to the playback, and I can honestly say that it sucked. It's like my voice didn't do them justice.
Right.
If I had been a character, great, perfect. The narrating it's a very unique skill set, and I discovered from other projects that I'm working on, I can narrate in first person. I can't narrate in third person.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is that your main character is a girl. It's a female. And, I mean, not that a man couldn't narrate a female character, but I think having Renee do the narration of the story, it really brings you more into the character of Lucy. You could read it and read it very well, and it could be enjoyable. But when Renee does it, it really feels like it's Lucy recounting her story to you. It's like you're sitting on a porch drinking a Coke, and she's telling you the story of what happened to her one crazy summer. Adding her in, I think, really adds that little extra something to the podcast that really brings you just a little bit more into the world, into the story. It sort of sucks you in just a little bit more. It gets the hooks in just a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and I'm glad she thought of it.
Yeah.
Because originally, like, I was listening to Renee's book, Dreaming of Deliverance, and I really liked that story. And we're chit-chatting back and forth, and I was telling her what I liked about it. And I asked her, I'd love to have you do a part in my book. And she said, well, I'd love to do a role. And I'm thinking, okay, this is great. I got Renee Chambliss with that voice wants to do a part in my book, but I don't have any because they're already filled 3 months ago.
Right, yeah.
So I had one minor character that didn't have any dialogue. She was just there. So I rewrote the book again, and my editor loves me.
Oh, my Lord.
So I know I didn't rewrite the book. I rewrote that part.
Oh, okay.
To actually give her dialogue, to make her a little more interactive with the professor.
Sure, okay. Oh, yeah. I think you had mentioned that she was supposed to be the person that originally told Professor Heslin that something had happened, right?
Yeah, exactly. So basically all it was is he got the phone call and she just ran over to see what was the matter. And that was the end of it. So I just expanded it. I gave her dialogue and I actually named the character after the main character in Renee's book.
Okay.
Because this character never had a name. We had to name her something.
Sure.
So I said, well, is it okay if I name her after your main character? And she liked the idea. So I had the role all done up, and I sent it to her, and she sent it back and emailed me back, said, well, I really like it, but I don't want to do it. And I'm like, ah, damn. Then I started reading the rest of her email, and it's because she said, well, because I like to narrate the whole thing.
Wow, wow.
Yeah, I'm thinking, wow, like Renee wants to narrate my book. And like she was telling me that she knew I was struggling with the narration and that if I wanted her to narrate it, that she'd be more than willing to, because she said the same thing that you said, said having a female narrate it would probably add to the story. And I agreed 100%. She came on board as the narrator, and she actually went out and got Arlene Radasky to do her voice role that she was supposed to do.
Okay, okay.
And then the only other character left now was the guy she was talking to on the phone. So I gave myself some dialogue, and I did that role myself.
You're like Stephen King or Stan Lee doing that little cameo in every movie that you do.
Yeah, I got that one little role.
Yeah, there's your voice credit. Ken Crawford as the officer on the phone. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, so now you've written your book, you've gotten your people that are going to be doing your voice work for you. So now, what is the actual process for getting an episode of Dead Hunt from, you know, what's the process to the point of where me and the other listeners of the podcast actually get it? You know, I mean, how long does it take? You know, what's the process to get the whole thing put together?
Well, my methodology of doing it, because my background is in audio, recording music, recording bands, singer-songwriters, stuff like that. I take her voice file first because she is the narrator. So I take Renee's voice and I go through all of her stuff and edit it for timing. Now, when she narrates it, she does all of the characters.
Hold on one sec. So now do you, I guess maybe what I'm saying, let's just back up for a sec. Do you send out, like once a month, you send out the script parts for the different people to do their lines and they send it back to you? Or have they already done all of their lines ahead of time and you're just taking those individual files and then putting them into each episode as it's ready to be put together?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
All of the voice roles are done. Like I said, I wasn't going to start the first, I wasn't going to release the first role or the first episode until I had every single voice recorded. With the exception of Renee, because she had to do the whole book.
Okay, I gotcha. So you got all the other characters, all of their dialogue, that's already saved to your hard drive and ready to go.
Yes.
Okay, and then, you know, you send out the stuff to Renee, and then she does her work. Okay, all right.
Yeah, and once she was, I think it was 5 or 6 chapters into it, then I started releasing the book. So as I was saying, the actual process itself is I take her voice file, and I edit it for timing, and get that exactly the way I need it. And then I bring in all the other voice characters as they're needed per episode. And then I just edit out the dialogue that she did and replace it with theirs.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then once the whole thing is done, I tweak it a little bit more. And then I start adding in the intro music and the outro music, the opening credits, the closing credits. And then when all that is done, then I start adding the background music or sound effects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when I listen to it, like I'll audition the different music that musicians have sent me. And if it works for that scene and it enhances the scene, I leave it in. If it doesn't, I find something else. And if the music or the sound effect is not really helping the scene, it's just there, then I take it
gotcha.
Out. And then I just bounce it down to MP3 and play with the ID3 tag-ins and drive Evo nuts because I keep screwing them up. And then
and of course, you're referring to Evo Terra of Podiobooks.com.
Of Podiobooks.com. Yeah.
Now, what recording software are you using? I mean, this is a sort of geeky podcast here, so we got to get a little techie about this stuff.
Okay, it's it went through a couple of versions. Originally, I started with Pro Tools, but my Pro Tools interface was acting up. And if the interface is not working, Pro Tools will not even run. It's got to recognize the hardware. That's what makes Pro Tools universal with every other Pro Tools system. It has to have a Pro Tools hardware to run it. So you know it's compatible with everybody else's. But mine was acting up, and so sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't. And I couldn't have it stop working in the middle of an episode because I had to start over again.
Yeah, that would not be good.
No. So I tried Audacity because a lot of people really like Audacity. It didn't, because of my audio background, it's just I didn't like it. I have it. I still use it for other things, but not for doing a full cast.
Point of art, I actually use Audacity.
Well, I use it too, but not for a full cast because I want more control over what Audacity can give me.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So I went with my old standby of Adobe Audition.
Okay.
And that's what I've been using since episode 1 because I had to restart several times because of my Pro Tools hardware messing up on me.
Right.
Sent back for warranty. Great guys. So, but now that I've actually started in Adobe Edition, I stayed with Adobe Edition for the entire show.
All right. So now instead of you've got all your dialogue, you've got all your stuff. It's ready to go. So, you know, typical episode for Dead Hunt is, you know, what, 20, 25 minutes right around there. How long does that actually take you to put everything together, to get all the dialogue, all the music? I mean, is it a day? Is it 5 hours? I mean, you know, what kind of time does it really take you to get this thing to the point where it's ready to get published?
It usually takes me anywhere between 8 to 14 hours per episode.
Wow.
So, like I said, my background is in audio, so I don't know a nice way to say this. I hear things that a lot of people don't, so I'm making changes that most people are never going to hear, but I know it's there, so I have to fix it.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you and I have had conversations before, and I think I told you recently that you've ruined me because of our conversations, which we'll get to in a little bit. I hear things now that either I didn't notice before or didn't bother me, but now I notice them and now they bother me.
Yeah, I have that effect on people.
Yes, you do. Okay, so now you've written a book and you're also podcasting your book. So do you consider yourself to be a writer, a podcaster, a writer who podcasts, a podcaster who writes? What do you think of yourself as far as what it is that you do?
I'm basically just, but the only way I could describe myself is I'm just creative. So, like, I would never say I'm a writer. I would never say that, hey, I'm a writer, because this is my first book and I'm learning as I go along. It's a really good story. I would consider myself a storyteller. It's a good story. I like it. A lot of people like it.
I like it too. Or else I wouldn't be interviewing you, I assure you.
I do. But I'm not diluting myself with dreams of, you know, it's never going to be on the New York Times bestseller list. I scratched winning the Pulitzer off my list of things to do. It's a really good story. The audio part, because I'm a creative person and my background is in audio, it just has to have something to do with audio.
Sure, yeah.
So anything with video, audio, things like that, I take what I can do and I try to make it better by using other toys and tools.
I think what I'm hearing from you is, in a lot of ways, how I think of what I'm doing with the DAO of Tech. I say I'm a podcaster, but I think first and foremost, I'm a content creator. You know, I'm creating something and I'm putting it out for people to listen to and hopefully enjoy. It sort of sounds like you're
it.
Well, thank you. It sort of sounds like you're saying almost the same thing, that you don't want to classify yourself, but you're, it kind of sounds like that's sort of what you're saying is that you're really just creating content, and a lot of what you're doing with it really involves either hobbies or past professions that you can really pull from to make the project work better, sound better, and be the best thing that you can put out.
Exactly. It's when I do something, I jump into it both feet, head first, and I just make it as good as I could possibly make it. And like I said, it's a really good story. It's never going to be on the New York Times bestseller list because I'm learning as I go along.
Sure, yeah.
So the audio part for me is easy, time-consuming, but it's easy. The writing part was really, really hard. Next time I hear someone say, well, being an author is great, you know, like, you don't have to work. I'm going to beat them to death with my novel. Because it's probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is finish that book. Writing is very, very hard.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, where endings are very tough. You know, you've built up to this point, and then it has to end in a way that's satisfactory to both yourself and hopefully to your listeners or to your readers. Yeah. Now, I think Dead Hunt is it's past two-thirds done, right?
It's just about done. There's about two or three episodes, left, and then the book is done.
All right, so it's been out for a while. You know, what kind of feedback have you gotten from your listeners? Has it been positive? Has it been negative? Has it been constructive criticism? You know, what kind of response have you gotten back from your listeners?
Well, I like to say everybody who doesn't hate it likes it.
Right. Very true.
Yeah. Like on Twitter, I'm getting a lot of positive comments. People seem to really like it. Going by the stats that I'm looking at, the last time I checked, it's been downloaded in 67 different countries.
Wowzers.
Yeah, and it hasn't even been out a full 2 months yet, and it's got about 27,000 downloads.
Wow, that's a lot of downloads.
Yeah, so like the feedback, as in like posting comments on the website or sending me emails, like that part hasn't really happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
But going by the numbers that, well, people are downloading it, and I'm in a whole bunch of different countries, so they're out there, they're listening to it, and they're still listening to it, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely sounds like positive feedback to me. Now, you had mentioned that you had gotten some feedback on Twitter. Now, what kind of role do you see the social media playing in your work? And I ask the question because a lot of other podcast authors like yourself, you know, they're using Twitter and they're using Facebook and they're using other social media as a means of promoting their work, as a means of connecting with their fans as well. I mean, you know, how do you see social media as in relation to your work with Dead Hunt?
It's something you have to be out there. Like the old story, you know, the saying, if you build it, they will come. That works for as long as you're watching that movie, because if you build it, they will not come, and because they don't know how to find you.
Yeah, they don't know about it.
Right, there's hundreds of people. I think Patio Books has well over 400 books as it is.
Yep. Yeah, they do.
And unless someone says, well, I'm looking for a zombie novel, then they may find me. But if they're just looking for something to listen to, and they'll listen to, like, they don't really know what they want to listen to. They just want to listen to a new audiobook. Chances are they're not going to find me because they don't know who I am. So by using Twitter, which I love, and having a Facebook fan page and my own website that's dedicated just to Dead Hunt, and getting into LinkedIn and all these different things, is I can interact with people and tell them who I am and what it is that I'm doing. So when they are looking for something, they now know how to find me, because you have to be out there.
Yeah. Now just to let people know, your website is www.kencrawford.com, and it's kennncrawford.com. And you would be twitter.com/kencrawford on Twitter, correct?
That is correct.
Now, you have been helping me with the audio in my podcast. Thank you, by the way. And I know that you had mentioned earlier that you have a background in audio production. Do you care to elaborate on that a little more?
I've been playing with music ever since, like my first recording, quote unquote, studio was a reel-to-reel tape deck.
Oh, wow.
And I updated to a 4-track cassette.
You were splicing audio with a razor blade, huh?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, and like I'm a songwriter. My like one of my songs have been played on U.S. radio stations. Ironically, I'm from Canada, and my music has never been played in Canada. So
Canadians, that's kind of weird. Someone know and, of? I tell you.
I'm telling you. So like my music is on U.S. radio stations. The last time I checked, I think there's over 6 dozen internet radio stations play my songs.
Wow.
Like, I don't like throwing names around, but at one point...
Throw a name around. Come on.
Okay. At one point, Hank Williams Jr. was going to record a song that I wrote.
Wow.
And I know a lot of people in the music business, and I basically worked my way up because when I started a little group called Home Recording on Yahoo, is because I had a 4-track and I wanted to learn some tips and tricks. And that grew into be one of the largest online recording groups for recording at home. And it's still active today. It's been around since 1999, I think I started.
Wow.
It.
10 years. Jeez. Or 11 years.
Yeah. And there's well over 2,000 members on there, and it's going strong. But I got into the writing and video, stuff like that, and I just couldn't keep up with the group. So I gave the group to a friend of mine, because we end up being co-owners, and I was co-owner of the Pro Tools group. So I just gave that to him. So this is your baby. You can take care of it. I did it for the last 10 years. Good luck with the next 10.
Next 10 years. Yeah.
Good luck with the next 10. So, but that's my background. It's like I really get into the producing aspect of things, where I like to produce something as opposed to record. Like, I love writing songs, and I'm a decent musician, but I'm not the world's greatest musician. But I'm really good, without bragging, I'm really good at editing, and I'm really good at producing.
If you can't toot your own horn, Ken, no one's going to do it for you.
Yeah, I know, but I don't like bragging.
It's okay.
Like I'm actually pretty good at audio. So
I would agree. And I think I've said this to other people as well. You know, yeah, I mean the audio quality of Dead Hunt is far and above what you get in 95% of the other podcasts that are out there. Like I said, you've ruined me because now I hear the people turning the pages when they're reading. I hear the deep breaths. I hear, you know, I hear all the warts and the whatevers. And I think a lot of it is due to Dead Hunt because the production value, I think, is just so high.
Thank you. It's, a lot of work goes into that because, like, everybody has their own pet peeves. Like, I believe I told you in one of our conversations that my pet peeve is digital silence. And that drives me right up the wall, is where they have a deep breath or a turn of a page and they'll cut that section out. So it goes from, like, and all microphones have noise and it's the sound of your room. And all of a sudden it goes to absolute silence. And there's no such thing as absolute silence. So it's the background noise you don't hear until it's gone. And that just, it really throws me off. And like, there's a couple of audio books that I was really enjoying the story, but the audio production was so bad that I couldn't tolerate listening to it anymore because it was driving me up the wall.
Yeah, I mean, but based on your background, that kind of makes sense. All right, so we're talking about podcasts. So besides writing and recording your own podcast, when you have some free time, what do you listen to when you've got the time to listen to other podcasters' work?
Well, right now I'm still listening to Dreaming of Deliverance by Renee Chambliss.
Yeah, actually, I just started listening to that myself a couple days ago.
I really like it. It's so far. Like her book, she always had a hard time fitting it into a genre because it doesn't fit all nice in the one genre. I basically say it's a fantasy without all the fairy tale stuff. And it's a really good story, and she does all the voices herself, and it's just, I just love listening to that story. And of course, I like listening to Renee. She could read the phone book, and I would listen to it.
Yeah, the way she delivers the lines, it's very, I don't say slow, but it's very deliberate. It's very methodical. It's almost like it's thought out, you know, 10 words in advance, how she's going to say it and how the inflection is going to be and where the emphasis is going to be. And yeah, she does a really beautiful job of not only reading your story or narrating your story, but narrating her own story.
When I was getting the raw audio files from her, because she didn't do any editing at all, she just recorded it, sent it to me. And I would hear her several times. She'd read the line, and I thought it was really good. And she'd say something like, no, I think it should be a little different. And then she'd do it again. And it would be better.
She'd
say, no, that's still not quite right. And then she'd do it again. So she's editing in her mind as she's going along. Like, she'll say it, and she'll say, no, I don't think that's the way it should go. And then she'll do it again. And it got to the point where several episodes into Dead Hunt, if she says, no, I think it should be this way, I just skip ahead until we get the last version, and I delete the first two, because I know she's right.
All right, so we've got Dreaming and Deliverance. What else is in your MP3 player?
I've listened to just about everything Scott Sigler does. The Future Dark Overlord is the man. I'm a junkie.
I'm a junkie too.
Anything Nathan Lowell does, and when people talk to me about getting into podcasting your novel, it's like, if you're going to do a straight read, you have to listen to Nathan Lowell because he's the man. When I grow up, I want to be Nathan. He is the man when it comes to doing a straight read. I listen to J.C. Hutchins, The Seventh Son, Phil Rossi, Harvey. I really like that one. Forever 15, Kimberly Steele. That's a good book. Blood Witness, Dave Hitt. That was a really interesting story. Wasn't what I was expecting. It's a cool story.
Nice to be surprised, right?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
What else have I listened to? Zombie Chronicles, James Melville.
That was a good story.
Yeah, you gotta have zombies. Like, I like vampires, I like zombies.
Yeah, I'm not too much into the vampires, but the zombie thing, I'm all about zombies.
Just yesterday I started listening to Zombie Nights by Tom, I apologize, I'm going to screw up your name, Lichtenberg, I think it is. Go on podiobooks.com, look for Zombie Nights. You'll find them.
I actually saw that myself, and the only reason why I didn't download it was because I have so many other books that I have to listen to. It's like, I can't put one more in the queue. Like, I got to finish what I have. Jeez. Yeah, well,
right on my website, it lists all the books that I subscribe to, and most of them I have queued up, ready to go. And I just got to finish listening to the ones that I'm listening to, and then they're next on
my list. Start the new ones. Yep. All right. So now we've talked about your book. We've talked about books that you listen to. So if I could wave a magic wand and say, Ken, you can work with any podcaster or any writer that's out there right now, who would you like to either collaborate on a story with or work with on a story that's out there right now, you know, who would you pick? Who was your go-to guy or girl?
Oh, Scott Sigler, because I'd be an instant star. Just to have my name next to his, like, oh, I'm famous. No. But I'd love to write a story with Renee.
Really? Yeah, okay. I can see that. Renee Chambliss, of course, we're talking about. All right, now we're going to get a little bit geeky here because, I mean, this is a technology podcast. So are you a Mac or a PC guy, Ken?
I use PC for recordings.
Okay. So does that mean you use Mac for other stuff, or are you just a PC guy overall?
I'm trying to be nice. No, I use PC.
Okay.
Eventually, I'm going to get a Mac just because I've heard so much about them. But right now, I use PC for everything.
Okay. What are you running for a browser, i.e. Firefox or Chrome, or some other option, Opera or Flock or whatever?
Well, up until today, from talking to you, I was using Firefox, but now I loaded up Google Chrome, and I'm really liking that. Thank you very much.
And so that would be thanks to me again, too. Okay. What is the one piece of technology you could not live without right now?
The computer. Everything I do, like all my writings, all audio, internet, because I'm so isolated out here. Like, I don't even have cable TV out here.
That was first. And you don't get Hulu up there, do you?
No.
I tell you. Or Netflix.
Don't get Netflix. I don't even get a cell phone signal up here. So the one piece of technology I can't live without is the only one that actually works. And that's the internet, because the computer. And it was only up until about 3 months ago we actually got high-speed internet.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. So you're talking dial-up, you're talking DSL, is it a cable modem, fiber optics? What you got going on there?
Satellite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, up until then, the only option available in my area was dial-up.
Oh, Lord.
So I have all of these people sending me WAV files that are huge, and they would send me an email, and then I have to get in the car, drive to the library, which is about a half hour away, with my laptop, download it, then take it home, put it on the computer to edit it.
And
I did that for just about every single voiceover before Renee got on board. Because just as she was coming on board, I actually got high speed.
Oh, God, that's awful. Oh. Yeah, well, it's funny because my mom had dial-up for a very long time, and it just got to the point of where I told her, I said, Mom, I said, I refuse to do any more work on this computer until you at least, at the bare minimum, get DSL. I cannot sit here for 5 hours waiting for something to download, for an update, for God knows how many programs to download. I just can't do it. I don't have the time to sit here waiting for this crap to download. So yeah, I guess it's good to get high speed. Definitely. No doubt.
Oh, it's a dream come true, because especially if a program is going to do an update and you need the update. For example, iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, it's one of these things you love to hate.
Yes, we do. We all do.
iTunes doesn't do an update. It makes you download the entire thing.
And it gets bigger every time.
Yes, and you know how long it takes to download 80 megs on dial-up?
I don't even want to think about it.
And it's a very slow dial-up. I'm basically at the speed of a 2400 baud modem.
Oh, God.
So basically, you start the update and you can't stop it. So you just basically don't use that computer or your telephone for the next 2.5 days.
Yeah, so you just walk away. Just walk away.
Yeah, pretty much.
And hope that the connection doesn't hang up on you at some point in time for whatever reason.
Which it has done.
Well, you know, Ken, that's it. That's all I got for questions. You know, thanks for coming on and thanks for talking to me. You know,
Thank you for having me.
It's really been a treat for me, because not only am I a fan of your work. So it's fun to listen to your work and then talk to you as a fan. And I think we've gotten pretty friendly over the past month or so. So, you know, it's really great to have you on, and I've really enjoyed talking to you about Dead Hunt and, you know, how you go about doing what it is that you do that I enjoy listening to so much.
Oh, thank you. I love being on your show. I listen to your show all the time.
Well, thank you. And again, really like and you have helped me make my show better. So.
Yeah, it's going to keep getting better.
I appreciate that, too. I appreciate that very much. All right, Ken. Well, I know that at this point in time, it's about 12:45 my time, and you're an hour ahead of me, so it's almost 2 o'clock your time. So I don't want to keep you on Skype any longer than I need to. I'm sure you probably want to go to bed at some point in time. So,
eventually.
You know, just want to see. Yeah, yeah. the two of us are a couple of night owls here. We're talking at 4 o'clock in the morning here. So, you know, good luck with Dead Hunt. And, you know, are we going to hear something new coming out from Ken Crawford after Dead Hunt is done?
I'm working on Dead Hunt 2.
Okay.
Hey, you never know. You may get a voice role in that.
I was hoping you would say that at some point in time to me, Ken.
And I'm also writing a vampire story.
Okay. Interesting.
That's being done for Kimmy Alexander.
Okay.
It's first-person female point of view. So that's wrote just for her. She's going to narrate the whole thing. And I'm working on a short story that my grandmother wrote about 30 years ago. And I also write a little thing called the Saga of Bayou Billy.
Yes, Bayou Billy. Yes, which can be found on your website, correct?
Yes, so you can just click on there. There's a little link there for Bayou Billy, and it's from a website called Creative Copy Challenge, and he gives you 10 random words, and you have to write a paragraph or something using all 10 words, and that's how Bayou Billy was born, and it became real popular, and I really love writing it because my warped sense of humor really gets to come out in Bayou Billy.
Yes, it does. All right, well, Ken, you know, again, I said thanks like 3 times, but I guess I'll say it one last time. You know, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you talking to me and the listeners here. And, you know, maybe we'll have you on again for maybe like an audio show where we can talk about recording gear and software and stuff like that for listeners that might be interested in hearing about stuff like that. So if you want to have a show about good recording techniques and procedures and good ways to do it, let me know, and I'll get Ken back on the show, and we'll do a show about audio recording. So I will talk to you later, Ken, and have a good night, okay?
Okay, thank you, and you have a good night, too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was my interview with Dead Hunt author Ken Crawford. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to the interview as much as I enjoyed recording it and talking to Ken. I do want to thank Ken again for coming on the show and doing the interview with me and for all the help that he's given me over the past few weeks on the finer details of audio recording and editing. You can download the audio version of Dead Hunt from iTunes or from podiobooks.com. The e-ink version is available on smashwords.com. And if you want to purchase the book in paperback form, it's available for sale at lulu.com. Ken also has a Facebook fan page for Dead Hunt. Just do a search on Facebook for Dead Hunt and it should pull up pretty quickly. You can follow Ken on Twitter. He is twitter.com/KenCrawford, KenCrawford. You can also go to Ken's website, www.kencrawford.com, for more information on Dead Hunt and the other projects that he is working on. Well, that's it for episode 5 of the Dow of Tech podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. The intro music for the Dow of Tech is Schrodinger's Cat Paradox by C-Jax. The closing music is Anhelos, the remastered version by Leechmaster. Both tracks are available on podsafeaudio.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am twitter.com/markprestash, MarkPrestash. And as I always like to say, my Twitter feed is more of a live stream as opposed to just all about tech. You're just as likely to get something about my kids or my wife as you are to get something about some techie type thing that I'm doing there. So just be aware of that. And if you want to send me an email, if you have questions, comments, praise, insults, or whatever, send me the email. It's taospotting@gmail.com. That's taospotting@gmail.com. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you all next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Off the coast of Nova Scotia, on a remote island, a lonely scientist, a powerful computer, a simple mistake unleashes a new threat somewhere in the hills of Margaree.
Everyone makes mistakes. Some are small. Some are bigger. My father's mistake, born of an innocent heart fueled by sadness, was the greatest mistake. Some thought the death of his little girl drove him to the point of insanity. Some thought he was trying to be God. But this is not how it happened. He wanted to save me. To give me life. And in doing so, everyone was doomed.
Dead Hunt, a Ken Crawford podcast novel. Visit us online at deadhunt.kencrawford.com.